Very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. Well, it's the end of an era for one man who sits opposite me this morning. We're looking at self-defence for young people and for adults, female adults, that's taking place in Turlochmore tonight. Mairead McGuinness joins us on today's programme, and Mairead Farrell also joins us. We're looking at joining the party. We're also looking for your assistance, indeed, when it comes to Galway Gardaí. They're looking for your assistance on that. We've added much more between now and 12 midday. The comment lines are open, though, if you want to get through to us, you can do so on 086 38 33 55 3. You can also call us on 0917 700 077. It's Tuesday. Good morning. And a very good morning to you, and we hope that you enjoyed the St. Patrick's weekend as well, and all the visitors that are still in town. And there was a huge amount of them in town last evening as well. You're very welcome to Galway City and County. It is the end of an era for my first guest today. He and his wife have sat down since Christmas and spoken about his future, and he's come to a decision this morning, and he joins me in studio. And Deputy Kieran Cannon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
You spoke to me yesterday. You and your wonderful wife, Niamh, have decided to...
to call it a day in the world of politics, Keith. We went away for a week together just after Christmas, and we walked a lot, we cycled a lot, we talked a lot, maybe more than we normally do, reflecting on the future. This time 20 years ago, I was on the campaign trail for the first local elections in 2004, surrounded by an extraordinary group of friends and supporters, and it's been an extraordinarily enjoyable and rewarding 20 years. But I think, Keith, at the end of 20 years, and I think no matter what role you occupy, as you approach that kind of major milestone, you begin to reflect on how much more you have to give. And I've always been deeply respectful of the people who have elected me again and again, the thousands of the people out there in the Galway East constituency who have given me their trust and support. And you're either all in on their behalf, Keith, or you're not. And I think at the end of 20 years, your enthusiasm does begin to wane somewhat, and that would not be fair to the people who have put their faith in me in the past. So I'm calling you today in the sense that I won't be contesting the next general election, but I will remain in place right until the very end of this government, giving the people that elected me the support that they deserve and need in the coming months.
You're still a young man. It's a huge, huge decision for both of you to make. Effectively, you're given, your wife will be out of work and you'll be out of work. You won't go hungry.
No.
But you're still a young man and a lot to give from there. And like, politics was your passion, but politics has changed.
It was. The power of politics to affect change, Keith, is extraordinary, and that's the reason I got involved in the first place. You know, looking at my local community initially, looking at the greater Loughrea electoral area and ultimately Galway, seeing what did we need to do to make this an attractive place to live, to grow up in, to live in, to work in, to grow old in. So it has been an exceptionally rewarding 20 years, being able to look back with some degree of pride and a sense of accomplishment that I was able to work with exceptional people in communities across our constituency in doing really unique things. But as I said, Keith, you know, there's only so much you can give. I'm 58 this year. I feel I have a lot of energy and enthusiasm left for life and for work in general, and I want to use that to the best possible effect. And I think it's time to step aside from the world of politics, give, and you know, we're really fortunate in Fine Gael and Galway East. If you look at the executive, the people leading our party now, they're all under 30, and they're all extraordinarily talented and committed young people, and they have so much to give. I'll be working alongside them to ensure that Fine Gael continues to ably represent the people of Galway East in the future. But it's time for me to look to new horizons. You know, it's springtime, Keith. Everyone kind of, you know, takes a step back this time of the year and say, where exactly am I going? Reflect on their future. That's what I'm doing. And I'm looking forward, to be honest, Keith, to have some degree of freedom now and being able to look, turn the corner, look at a new horizon and see what opportunities present.
So as you sit here and give us this news this morning, is there a sense of relief when you were driving in from home this morning to the studio?
There is, Keith. You know, you mentioned earlier on about politics being challenging. You know, it's become exceptionally challenging in the last perhaps 5 years or so.
Social media-wise?
Social media is a factor. There's no question about that.
And the lack of regulation, which you've tried very hard to change.
We have, and there are changes on the way, and the companies that operate the social media platforms are seemingly committed to that change. But, you know, there's a kind of a coarseness and a toxicity creeping into politics right now. And, you know, every politician, because ultimately, Keith, you put yourself in the public domain. You put your head above the parapet, in essence, and saying, I'm out there, I'm here, I'm seeking your support to represent you. I'm asking for your vote in an upcoming election. And you absolutely deserve to have a serious level of scrutiny applied to you and your performance as a political public representative. But we're now straying, Keith, into the territory far beyond normal public scrutiny, where I would argue people's health and well-being is being impacted, those in politics, both local and national, because of the abuse they're subjected to at times. It's not fair, it's not acceptable, and I do think it's causing an awful lot of, and Declan Varley wrote really well on this recently in the Galway Advertiser, it's causing a lot of people who are contemplating perhaps getting into politics for the very first time, the upcoming local elections in June, to really reflect on, do they want to subject themselves and indeed their families to that level of abuse? And I think that's an important aspect of my decision making here this morning as well.
You're a public representative, but you're not a public punching bag.
Correct.
Which is what you're treated as.
And at times. I mean, look, I'd hate to think, Keith, that, you know, it's all doom and gloom. I've enjoyed every single day of that 20 years. And at times, yes, you know, you might get the odd spite-filled comment on Facebook or wherever it might be.
And do you let those in, do you?
I don't let them in. No, I don't. You couldn't. And I counterbalance that, Keith, by all of the goodwill and the kindness and the support that's been shown to me and to Niamh, my family, and indeed to my circle of friends who've been with me for the 20 years working in this capacity. I don't, Keith, and I know others do. And I know I talk to all of my colleagues in Leinster House from all parties. You know, we all sit down every now and again, just happen to casually meet one another in the canteen for a cup of tea. And it does impact heavily upon some people who are particularly sensitive to that kind of criticism. But there's no consideration of that. It's just, as you say, Keith, it's open season. And I think if we're looking at encouraging a new generation, which we should be, into the world of politics, into the world of public representation, we really have to reflect on how we're going to address that in the future. It's exceptionally difficult because ultimately what a social media platform is gives people the opportunity, and I would argue a valuable one, to speak freely in the public domain. But I think we need to reflect on how that is impacting on people and see, can we somehow reduce that level of abuse? And I think ultimately, Keith, you know what it's about? It's about society saying, you know, that if you are in the conversation, and I engage in several conversations on social media all the time, I think I found it a great way of communicating with people. But if somebody jumps in a conversation, it's like the school playground, and they're a bully and they're, you know, saying something that is hateful and toxic to an individual, be they a public representative or anybody else, others in the conversation should jump and say, well, actually, no, that's not acceptable. Yeah.
Then that's standing up to the bully.
That's standing up to the bully.
Yeah, but it's the keyboard warriors from there.
Yeah.
Have you spoken to the Taoiseach on this?
Yes. Just after Niamh and I were away, just in January, I went to meet him. We had a very long conversation, essentially saying to him what I'm saying to you, Keith, right now, that I felt at the end of 20 years I had given all that I could give and I wanted to look at new opportunities. He was very supportive, very, very. I mean, he has said himself on a number of occasions in the public domain, he does not see himself spending a lifetime in politics. So as I say, given that 20 years, he was very supportive. We had a number of conversations since January up until last Friday night. And he's been supportive of this decision from the very beginning.
You've done a lot in politics. You're a minister for a while as well. You represent the diaspora, and you did a very good job on that. You enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed that. And you know, like, you were with me, Keith, on a number of those trips, particularly to our sister cities in Chicago and the great team at the Milwaukee Irish Festival. I don't think you understand this, Keith. You have a deep appreciation of the power of our diaspora worldwide, of our Irish communities worldwide. I still don't think we fully understand that within the world of politics, within government, how important it is to stay sustaining and building and nurturing that community of Irish people worldwide. They do extraordinary things on our behalf. They propagate Irish culture across the world. The very fact that we have right now, Keith, including my own son, Irish young people dotted all over the world doing exceptional things in whatever field that they choose to pursue. They are, on a daily basis, our ambassadors. You know, they are the best of Ireland. And I don't think we do enough to support them. And that was something I tried to do in my time in that ministry, was to increase the level of support and connection with them. But I think it's something we should really reflect on in the future, because we now have an exceptionally mobile population of, you know, for example, the last 3 years, 80,000 Irish people have left Ireland to go abroad, and 90,000 have come back. So we've people moving in and out the whole time, and we need to find a way of better communicating with them.
Come back to Kieran Cannon.
Mm.
Do you know what you're going to do?
I have no idea, Keith. I'm very excited, I have to say, by the fact that, you know, I can turn a corner now at the end of this government, whenever the next election is. And
which
then,
is going to be October. Go on, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Turn a corner and then just look at whatever opportunities present. I've always believed that whatever I do, Keith, I've tried to do something that has an impact on people's lives, be it at local level or national level. And there are so many opportunities that present outside of the world of politics to have an equally positive impact. So I'm looking forward to seeing what those options are. I have a year now, you know, kind of to engage perhaps with people working in other capacities, in other domains that have an equal societal benefit, and see where that takes me. Mm-hmm.
A couple of comments coming in. Keith, we ask Kieran, will he be starting up the band The Lads and back playing in the Trappers again from the Trappers Drinkers back in the day, and tell him to warm up the keyboards, somebody else said from there.
Those were good days in the Trappers.
Sending my best wishes to Kieran on the news of his retirement from politics. We always had a very positive engagement. That comes from Councillor Shelley Hurchard-Quinn. And Keith, Kieran Cannon gives politics a good name. Sad to see him go. Wishing him and his family the very best. That comes from Kieran. And Geraldine from Loch Race says, sorry to hear Kieran is going. Fully understand his decision. Time to write the book, Kieran. Best wishes. Is there a book in you?
There may be, Keith, in the future, but the book,
book
is a long way away yet.
Keith, I sincerely want to wish Kieran the very best in his political retirement. He should do so knowing that he made a fantastic contribution to the local area, improving the lives of so many and delivering to the communities and sporting organisation. His time as junior minister in education saw a focus on the local funding for our schools, and he continues to support schools with prioritising capital investment. It's a pleasure for me to work with him for the past 10 years. It's now for Kieran and Niamh time, so it is the departure lounge. It's not a bad place to be in. He'd be a hard act to follow, and that comes from Councillor Joe Byrne. Again, I know our own Ollie Turner is going for the local elections, perhaps might go for national as well. There's an extra seat.
Yeah, I mean... Will
you go into political commentary, maybe?
That's something that certainly one of the things I would like to pursue. The landscape here in Galway East is vibrant, it's healthy. There are new young people coming into politics all the time. I think the vast majority of people, Keith, who do enter for the first time, particularly in the local elections, into the world of politics, are people who have already done great things in their local communities, and they've raised their head above the parapet. They've gathered other people around them, other community activists, and said, what does our parish, our town, our village need? So it's a kind of a logical transition to go from that into the world of politics. And there are a lot of people right now, because I know them, I've been very privileged and fortunate to work with them, doing really good things in their communities across County Galway as a whole. So I've every confidence, despite the toxicity, despite the stuff you get slung at you every now and again, that those people will step up to the plate. Ollie being one, and it's great to see him coming on board in Fine Gael, and there are many others waiting in the wings as well. So it's not a day for kind of despair or despondency. It's a day for hope and positivity around the future.
Would you be hopeful that Fine Gael will hold the seat in Galway East?
I would be very hopeful, Keith. Yeah, you know,
there is an extra seat there.
There are now four seats in Galway East.
Yeah.
You know, statistically, look at the polling nationally, it would suggest from a numerical perspective that there is a seat there for Fine Gael. There's no question about that. And as I say, we have exceptionally good existing councillors, hopefully incoming councillors, and others as well, who could possibly look at holding that seat. So they'll be getting all of my support. You know, you're fortunate, Keith, if you spend 20 years doing anything, as you have done in your role here in Galway Bay FM, you amass a level of wisdom and experience and knowledge. As I have done in politics, I'm more than willing to share that with whomever decides, because whomever it is and whatever party it is, anybody who does put their head above the parapet and say, I'm rolling up my sleeves, I'm asking you to put your trust in me to work on your behalf, they deserve people's support. And maybe if there's anything to be learned from this morning, is that, you know, whomever they are, give them that support, give them, you know, a pat on the back and say, well done. Because ultimately, there's no difference between the woman or the man who says, I want to chair our local camogie club or our local soccer club or our local rugby club, and the person who says, I want to represent you in Galway County Council or in Shannon Éireann or in Dáil Éireann. They're all people who are out there simply trying to make a difference. It's as simple as that, Keith.
And, I mean, Fine Gael are taking quite a hammering when it comes to people not going for re-election. Is there a future for Fine Gael in government, do you reckon, with all of the TDs that are retiring?
Well, you see, Keith, there's a kind of a natural ebb and flow, and there always has been, not alone in the world of politics, but in life in general. And just coincidentally, there are a number of Fine Gael TDs who have spent, many of them, a lot longer than 20 years in politics. They see now that this is their option to leave the political stage.
Like you're doing.
And like I'm doing. And it's just the coincidence that there are a number of us at exactly that age or that point in our careers. I'm very confident, Keith, that the current government or something resembling when you and I were growing up, Keith, and nobody would have contemplated Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil working together in any kind of capacity. I think it's been an exceptionally successful partnership. It's given the country a level of stability and confidence. Keith, and I'll just cite one particular location. If you look at the town of Athenry, Keith, and Athenry as a microcosm of this country as a whole, representative of this country as a whole, if you look back at 2011, our country was on its knees. Our reputation was our international reputation was in absolute tatters. We had handed over the management of our financial affairs to an outside entity. And now, 13 years later, Ireland is in a much, much better place. We have full employment and we have huge international confidence in a country and in our people. And if you look at Athenry back in 2011, with two schools that were bursting at the seams, prefabs all over the place, urgently needing to have new accommodation. There's now two new 1,000 pupil schools in Athenry. And we've a company establishing its first ever presence outside of the US in the European Union. And it hasn't chosen Scotland or Paris or Italy. It has chosen the town of Athenry in East Galway, a small rural town. And it has said, we have confidence in the people of this town and the capacity of this town to be able to establish a really strong presence in the European Union. So that to me is reflective of the reputation of our country internationally, and most importantly, the reputation of our people internationally. Yeah. Highly educated, highly motivated, deeply trustworthy, with a strong work ethic. That's for me, and I've been very fortunate to work with incredible people in the last 20 years. That to me, along with my colleagues, is the greatest legacy one could ask for after 20 years, is that level of confidence internationally in Ireland now is at an all-time high. That's just the way it is, Keith.
And do you know what, for you to go out with Niamh on a high is the right way to go?
It's the right way to go.
The only way to go.
And
not when the
it just gives me the it gives me the opportunity to look at other options, Keith. Yeah. I've agonized over this at times since Christmas. And I get up some mornings and I think, this is no, Kieran, this is not the right decision. And then I go to Dublin for the week and I meet colleagues, and there's an ebb and a flow of something I'm sure you experience as well in making your own decision. But ultimately, a couple of weeks ago, we sat down one night and we said, yeah, that's it. We're moving on. New horizons. Let's see where it takes.
Absolutely. Keith, a decent, kind, respectful man bowing out, making the right decision while he has the health to do so, and good luck to Kieran. It's been a pleasure working with you. We will continue to work with you.
Oh, very much so, Keith.
Yeah.
Look forward to that in whatever capacity. I am the Fine Gael spokesperson on arts, media and culture, and we've regularly had yourselves and colleagues from the local radio stations around the country visiting us in Leinster House to make the case that you provide an extraordinary public service, and you do. And we've seen that come to the fore, being made really tangible during the pandemic,
yeah.
where you sat at that desk every morning, Keith, and colleagues, and reassure people that everything will be okay. We're going to manage this. We're going to get through this. And people sometimes do not understand the value of that in terms of building solidarity within our local communities all over. And the people who turn on the radio in the morning, they have someone to listen to. They have someone to perhaps break the cycle of loneliness. Someone they know that they're on the other end of that microphone that they can trust what they're telling them is true and accurate and reflective of the current situation. So that's the value of Galway Bay FM. That's the value of local radio. So, you know, and I think we need to appreciate that in the future. And
you know. Some well done to you. Congratulations to you on even making the decision. And we will be talking to you well before you finish as well. And it's going to be an interesting local elections as well.
It certainly is.
Keeping an eye on that, so it is. All right, thank you for joining us. So the news as of this morning is that Deputy Kieran Cannon has decided he's stepping away from politics, in his own words, and he has no decision as to what he's going to do, but he's going to evaluate everything. Kieran, thanks for dropping into us.
Thank you, Keith. Thanks very much.
Commercial break. We're coming back and we're looking, by the way, at self-defence next. Stay tuned for that and more just after these. Now, very good morning to you. Good reaction, I have to say, to Kieran Cannon's announcement this morning on the programme that he's stepping away from politics at the end of this term. Now, there's two things happening today. One of them is happening in Cloister Ballyhanclore, and the other one is happening in the Turlough Moor Social Centre tonight. But this is all to do with self-protection. And I'm joined in studio by Aidan Carl and Arena Leon. And they joined me from a company called Hard Target Self-Defence Academy. And basically, Aidan, from looking at what you're going to do in the school today and again tonight, again, self-defence is very, very important.
Indeed, Keith, yes, we are. And I'll throw one at you straight away. 7:38:55. That's an unusual one.
7:38:55.
Does that resonate with you?
No, but 7:30 would be what, 25 minutes away from 7:55. Yeah.
It's how we communicate, would you believe, Keith? So 7% words, pitch and tone would be 38%, and body language is 55%. But yet I was just saying to Arena, we were watching one of your colleagues there and we were sitting outside, and he would probably be 60% words, 35% pitch and tone, and possibly 5% body language. So obviously it doesn't relate to that. But my point being, we're going to talk a lot about body language and how predators select their victims based on their body language.
So when you say body language, so when you saw me for the first time today, then what the hell? A hell of a body.
A dodgy character.
Hell of a body you were looking at from there. But can you judge that, whether there's anger involved, whether there's intent, mental issues? Can you just judge that?
Well, you can, Keith. I mean, it's very complex, but what we would say is the first standalone body language signal is that if I have sinister intention towards you, I have to get closer to you. So if I want to cause you harm in a physical sense, I got to get closer to you. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could be aggressive, of course, Keith, but I'm moving away from you or I'm a certain distance from you, et cetera, et cetera. So we are roughly, what, 2 arm lengths from each other here today.
Yeah.
If I have bad intention towards you, I've got to breach that space quite quickly. So a lot of people have all this information that someone's getting closer to them, but they get overwhelmed with adrenaline and so on. They don't see these signals coming at them. So it's really just about monitoring, controlling that space between you and, they say, the bad guy.
Mm. And if you're monitoring that space, then what can you do to stop it?
Well, we have a technique called a fence, which is basically protecting your personal space. We use this. So if I show you my hands, John, and all your listeners, it's hard for them to imagine, but it's a universal sign to stop. Mm. It's a universal sign of peace. But if I was to do this as I close my fist to you...
It's aggressive.
Yes. So it's, look, John, I really don't need problems. Mm. I really just want to walk away. So it's really just controlling that space between...
And does that work?
Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. Because I'm putting a structure up between me and you, kid. I'm saying stop. But will it work all the time? Absolutely not. So unfortunately, we may have to preemptively strike. We have to preemptively act. That could be throwing a cup of coffee in your face. It could be keeping this barrier between me and you, which is the table, so I can facilitate my escape.
I suppose it's to stop the intent that the person may have and to try and stop them in their tracks from there, but then you don't want to aggravate it any further.
Absolutely.
So perhaps by throwing that cup of coffee, you might just aggravate it and make them more intent on doing damage.
Absolutely. So we really have to say, Keith, what is warranted here? What is warranted here? It's, people would often say to us, you'll come right back to your question, you're being choked, you're being grabbed, what would you do? And I actually say, kind of tongue-in-cheek, I don't actually know who's doing the grabbing, who's doing the joking. And people say, does it really matter? So we train, obviously, various different government agencies. If you can imagine, we're training maybe a psychiatric nurse and someone has them by the throat, maybe a patient has them by the throat.
Yeah.
They have to use a breakaway technique, a physical intervention technique that's not going to harm the patient. I could be dealing with someone who's drunk. I don't want to harm them. We're not in the business of harming people, so we're looking for damage limitation. So the cup of coffee may be warranted. The cup of coffee could be, you know, over the top.
Mm.
So it really depends on each situation, Keith, if you can imagine. But the body language thing I mentioned at the start, we're studying this extensively for over 20 odd years. And predators, regardless of their intention, you know, to rob your phone, to remove you to a secondary location, whatever it would be, you will be selected based on your body language. And that, your body language, my body language, everyone's body language is listening to this morning, it's a direct manifestation of our thoughts. So what shows up on a skeletal system, what shows up in our muscular system, is how we feel at that particular time, Keith.
So you're saying that if you're weak or you lack confidence or you've been attacked before and you kind of carry that with you, that you're a walking target for people who want to take advantage of you because of your body language?
Well, you're absolutely, you've hit on something there, Keith. The residue, if you want to say, of an attack, we've people calling us, you know, texting us, emailing us to come in for our training. And we handle that very sensitively as well. Of course, we come from a psychological perspective as well. But it's very much, if we have been a victim of assault, unless we've dealt with that, maybe through self-protection training, maybe through some therapy, it will manifest on your skeletal system. So we go deep into that, how we carry ourselves. Is there a lack of synergy between the upper and lower body?
Now, you're going into Cloister Ballycloran today, yourself and Arena, and that's a school.
Mm-hmm.
What are the differences between dealing with adults and then dealing with young adults?
I think with that one, Keith, you know, what teenagers are up against at the moment, there's a lot of peer pressure. And so we're going to talk to them a little bit of how to interact with their peers, how not to succumb to that peer pressure as well. And I think a lot of what they, as Aidan said, with body language, I think is massively important there. If you have somebody who has been dealing with bullying, who's been, you know, insecurities, as teenagers have, you know, they're dealing with a lot as they're growing up, they're going to show that on their frame and they're going to be more susceptible to
being hit. So again, the frame is it.
Mm, absolutely. And I think a lot of times, you know, I would deal a lot with women. And sometimes people feel that they're too polite to say no, or that we've been brought up in a society that says, you know, you need to be nice. You need to, you know, you can't say no. You can't, you know, be disrespectful. And we're saying there's a way to set boundaries without being disrespectful.
But we're talking here about split seconds. You're talking about the difference between getting it right and getting it very wrong.
Absolutely.
And so, again, I hear a lot of parents indeed on the program. Talk about the lack of self-confidence now in young people because their head is thrown into a mobile phone or a device rather than looking up and looking out, they're looking down. So how do you change that arena?
A lot of what we do in the academy, Keith, when we're working with teenagers, is all to do with the voice. So we would say one of the most powerful tools that you have is your voice, and just getting the children used to saying no, using their words as they create distance if there is a threat coming at them. So filling that void with dialogue allows for that distance to be created, but also realizing that if someone says no in a meek way, you may as well not say it. So we're saying, look, say it and mean it.
You mean a definitive no?
Absolutely.
End of
exactly
no.
That no means no, and it doesn't go any further, because a lot of times it can end up becoming a negotiation. And you're saying it shouldn't be like that. It should be even that it, if it is meek, that people should hear no means no, and that's what it is.
And Aidan, before we talk about tonight then in Turlochmore, have you seen successes in this? Because I'll go back to what I said to Arena, you're talking about split seconds here. If you're talking about a psychiatric nurse, you're trying to train that psychiatric nurse, they have about 10 patients that they're dealing with. And this happens in a split second.
You're absolutely right, Keith. And it comes back to our body's natural responses. So, you know, horrible to think about. If someone grabs you by the throat, Keith, your hands are going to go to the source of agitation, which is the hands at your throat.
To take away the hands.
Yes. So you're 90% there already. And then through the training, we do a lot of stress inoculation training. So we put them through what we call forge training, a continuum. So a very base level, kind of benign situations, and then a continuum where it becomes more sinister. And building that muscle memory. But the one thing I'll say to Keith, every one of your listeners has this innate survival mechanism, which is intuition. People who train it would be sick of me talking about this, but their sixth sense. You would have felt it, Keith, over the years, something's not quite right here. And when we cross-examine that, when we deny it, often, you know, we end up in the eye of the storm, so to speak.
Yeah.
So listening to that intuition, if I can get one thing across today and this evening, is listen to the intuition. It will never trick you.
Mm. Rina, just looking at this evening, so you're in Clutchballyclore, a wonderful new school indeed. Well, it's not new any longer, it's in Claregalba. But you're going to go to the Turlochmore Social Centre tonight, 8 p.m. to 10 o'clock. And this is a women's only event.
Yes.
You're bringing Aidan with you, though. And you're going to give people, there is a fee on this one of 20 euros, but you will give them skill sets and, again, might just give them the confidence to continue with life.
Absolutely. And I think, Keith, in particular for women, you know, women are always going to come from a slight disadvantage in that, you know, more than likely a potential attacker, a potential predator is going to be bigger, stronger, faster than them. And that's just physics, you know, it's just biology. So we teach women to look out for red flags. So the whole way along, saying, look, if someone is acting overly aggressive to you, but it's only a drip effect, you're going to watch out for that. That's unusual behavior. If somebody is, you know, that in the workplace and you find, don't know what it is about this person, but they just don't seem to like me. And again, back to what Aidan said, that's your intuition. And you're saying, again, they may not be a dangerous person, but it's unusual behavior, just to watch out for it. So a lot of what we say is to watch out for those red flags, to recognize a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah.
And that comes a lot into, you know, when people are going out, socializing, and you're saying, well, does he click the fingers at the waiter? You're going, again, a little bit of a red flag, a little bit of aggression, arrogance, exactly. Big ego there.
Mm.
Or you're saying, you know, someone wants to buy you a drink, do they have to put the hand on you? And say, well, why do they feel the need to touch you? Mm. And again, you may feel, I'm okay with that. Or you might feel, I didn't ask him to touch me. And just how to safely remove that without escalating the situation. And I think, again, Keith, as we touched on before, you know, I think women are expected to be agreeable. And I think that that's something that needs to stop. That's, as a society, we shouldn't expect women to be agreeable simply because they're women. You ever look at a bar scene and, you know, if someone offers to buy a woman a drink and she says, no, I'm okay, it often starts a negotiation. But if another man decides to buy another man a drink and he says, no, I'm okay, they never ask again.
Yeah.
It's always, that's where it ends.
So it really is respect.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Down to respect.
Absolutely.
So tonight then, as I go along between 8 o'clock and 10, there's a 20 euro fee on this one, but it could be the beginning. Age profile, because when you say it's women's only, is from what age profile?
From about 14 years upwards. Now, anyone who's, you know, under the age of 18 would need to be accompanied by an adult, but they're more than welcome. I do feel that this, they need to be taught this at a younger age. You know, we would go around schools and teach this, but particularly I think for that age group where they're under a lot of pressure, where they're starting to explore a bit more social scenes, mm-hmm. I think it's crucial that they understand this.
14 to whatever age?
Exactly. Mm. There's no limit.
Okay. And again, from a physical point of view, will they be engaging with others? Will they, you know, should they wear loose clothing or just come along as themselves?
Come along as themselves. This is a non-physical course. So this particular course that we're running, it's all just theory.
All
so
right.
It's all just theory and what to do before the fight happens, which is numerous. I mean, Keith, most fights can be avoided and it comes down to awareness.
Mm. Aidan Carroll, where can they get further details and what's your website address?
It's hardtargetselfdefense.com. And we've lots of information there about the courses, the non-physical and the physical courses we provide throughout the year.
All right, lads, thanks indeed for joining us today. Rina and Aidan, thank you for joining us.
Thank
further
you,
details from Hard
much,
Target and Self-Defense, if they want to just Google that and get further
Self-Defense
details.
Self-Defense Academy.
All right, guys, thanks indeed for joining us today in the programme. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. I want to go to Deputy Mayor Aidan Farrell, who joins me on the line, because just wait for this. It's a headline figure today, almost 8,900 children are waiting for HSE needs assessments. No, I said 8,900. And behind each and every one of those 8,900 children, there are families. Deputy Farrell, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks.
I'm conscious, obviously, that I've come on just after Kieran Cannon announced that he won't be contesting in the next general election. I just want to wish him, obviously, all the best for the future.
Yeah, it's a big decision. You have a few more years of service before you can do that, so you have. But
well, that'll be the people's decision, so we'll see.
That, going back to that figure though, 8,900 children waiting for HSC needs assessment. And again, when you look at the figures and you bore into them, nearly 7,000 children have been waiting for more than 3 months for this. And the families that are trying to keep the show on the road, this is really ridiculous.
Oh, to be honest, Keith, this is awful. And, you know, we all are, you know, families who are really struggling to, you know, to try and get the supports that their children need and the huge difficulties that they face and encounter as a result of that. And really and truthfully, this is something that actually became a legal entitlement since 2005 to have this assessment within the 6 month period. And we're almost 20 years later and we simply don't have the capacity. So there's something very wrong here. And I suppose just to give a bit of context to the background of it.
Is it regional? Sorry. Can I ask you, or is it the lack of staff, or is it regional? Is the West doing okay, or is Limerick doing okay, or Cork and Galway's not?
I haven't been given the local breakdown for it, unfortunately. But either way, what we have is, like, I think, to be honest, it's across the board, in my view, from dealing with people. It's a huge issue everywhere, really, at this point in time. But it kind of, what we've seen, like, in the last number of years, actually, we've seen a 400% increase in the children who have to wait for 6 months. So there's this entitlement under the Disability Act that a child should be able to get an assessment within 6 months. Now, it kind of all goes back to a High Court case that parents felt they were forced to take because the HSE had changed the way they were doing the assessment. So they'd done this preliminary assessment. And from what families were telling us, it was essentially kind of a 30-minute assessment, and they didn't get that kind of full assessment that was required. And the High Court then said that, you know, this was that they were not meeting their legal entitlement for these children. So now we have a situation where there's 8,900 children waiting, overdue for assessment. So that means that they've been waiting over this 6 month period that they've been entitled to. When we look at actually the amount of children that are waiting, you know, it's 19,000 children in total on the waiting list. So that's the ones that are applying who have, you know, applied less than 6 months in that. But the fact that we have we almost have 9,000 children waiting for more than 6 months, i.e. that they're waiting for longer than they're actually entitled to, okay, is absolutely shocking.
Can I ask you, though, it's one thing then to have the needs assessment done, but once that needs assessment is done, is the necessary care and the availability of that care easy to access?
Well, no, and that's a huge issue. And a lot of us will know about the whole issue of people trying to access speech and language therapy, for example, that's a major issue. And we've all heard the stories of, the way sometimes the way these things work out within the HSE, where a speech and language therapist might drive an hour and a half to get to a school in the middle of Connemara and only be allowed or be able to meet one child rather than meeting all three or four children that need the speech and language therapy in
so
that school.
No,
I'm pretty
thinking.
Sure I've raised it on this show before in relation to that. So what we need to do is we need to look exactly at the Children's Disability Network teams. We need to make sure that we're increasing capacity, and we're going to have to make use of the private sector capacity as well, where we're tackling these crazy lists. But we also at the same time need to make sure that we're actually building up on the public capacity, because that's absolutely crucial, so that we don't have a situation whereby children are waiting for longer than they're supposed to. And Keith, you'll know that parents are often told, oh, look, you don't need this in order to, you don't need an assessment in order to get the support. And that might technically be the case, but the lived reality for families simply shows that that is not the case. Because in a society where there is now limited supports, we know all that, we know that there's the limited supports there, then obviously once a child has been, assessed and, has been identified what their needs are, etc., then of course they're going to get those supports before others. And that's just simply the way it is. So it's awful that we have a situation where, children are kind of competing early for limited resources, for simple things that will actually make their lives much easier and really help them. And instead what we have is a situation where children are literally competing, and it shouldn't be the case. But the fact that we've now see that there's almost 9,000 children waiting over the actual legal time that they're supposed to be waiting, it just simply isn't good enough. And what we really need to see now is a serious investment, serious investment. And what we have seen, obviously, is the underinvestment. And of course, Keith, we've also seen in relation to the health sector, in you know, the embargoes and everything like that. And I've actually had people in who work in speech and language therapy across the West contact me saying that, you know, they're really seeing that impact of the embargo. So look, we really need to see the government really act on this, because it's not fair that children are being treated like this.
All right, Deputy Farrell, thank you indeed for joining us today on the programme. And again, just if you're affected by this, feel free to drop us an email to comments@galwaybfm.ie. That's comments, C-O-M-M-E-N-T-S @galwaybfm.ie. And you can also, if you want to, you can WhatsApp us, or you can text us to 086-3833-553. That's 086-3833-553. And those lines are open and they're free, and you can get straight through to us straight away if you want. We're back very shortly. Stay tuned for that and much more to come between now and 12 midday. Let's head, though, towards the 10 o'clock news and the news desk, and we'll talk to you on the other side.